Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross in for Femi today. Of course, this show is brought to you by DraftKings. And a pleasure to be joined by Michael Lombardi back on the East Coast. It is getting hot out here in the West Coast already. Michael, a good tan on you, Michael. I haven't seen you in a while. You're looking good. Everything well out there after this beautiful 4th of July weekend?
You know, it's been awesome. The weather's been great, so you get to go out there in the sun. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not like I'm working on it. It just naturally happens because you're out there chasing all these grandchildren around. I'm exhausted. But other than that, I'm doing great, David. It's good to have you. Appreciate it. You know, we're in week 22 of the offseason, right. So we're getting closer. One good thing about July is we know we're going to have football. The pads are going to go on. We're going to smell the grass. It's going to be a good day. So we're getting closer to it. But the 4th of July is always a time to celebrate our country's independence. And here we move. And so we go forward.
Absolutely. Hope everybody's been having a wonderful Independence Holiday weekend. John Machota, to that point, Michael's going to join us here later on this hour, talk all things Dallas Cowboys, maybe some issues down there with, I like to call him Super Dak Prescott. So we'll check that out with John a little bit later on. And then hour number two, our guy JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, all those moves being made in the NBA. And we'll catch up with JVT. And I wanted to start there, Michael, very quickly, because the Sixers, obviously, you know, they've been the big riser on the odds board, right? Cut in half here on the Eastern Conference and possibly to win the NBA championship next year. 4-1 here, second betting choice in the East. It's not so much just the Paul George move, but then when you see that Caleb Martin move yesterday from the Miami Heat, like starting to kind of fortify that bench a little bit. What do you make of what the Sixers are doing? Because you can see it. It's reflected in the odds here. People are starting to buy in that if you can keep the big fella healthy, you might have more than just a 1-2 punch with Tyrese Maxey this year.
Well, I think I really like, I mean, I'm not in love with all the move the 76ers have made. So they signed Drummond to be the backup center. They had tried to play Paul Reed in that role. And Paul Reed really is a power forward that that's not well enough to be off in space. And he needs to be with his back to the basket. So that experiment failed. He had a non-guaranteed contract. So, and then when they let Tobias Harris move on to Detroit, they needed a power forward or somebody to play within that role. And Caleb Martin is a young player who can go in there and do that, which I think was a really good signing for 4 years with he and Maxey. It gives them a defensive presence out there and playing really well. So I like that signing. I think George, they've improved their wings. You know, they've improved their backup center. I think certainly this is all going to come down to one thing, David. It's going to come down to whether Joel Embiid can stay healthy in the month of April. Can he play in May? And that remains to be seen. All this stuff doesn't really matter if he can't play in April or May. And that's been typically been the case. There's always some kind of injury that comes along. But I thought the Martin signing, they basically signed Martin for Paul Reed's money, and they ended up getting a better player and a guy who can start. He's going to start at the power forward, so it'll be he and Paul George on the wings, Maxey, and, you know, Maxey will be in the backcourt along with, I don't know who they're going to start back there with him, but maybe they'll start the rookie who they drafted from Duke, but McCain. And, you know, I think they'll move forward. I think McCain will come in off the bench, but this is a good team. On paper, it looks like they can do a lot of good things. However, it's going to be interesting to see if they stay healthy.
That's the thing. And it's the reason why when they were 12-1, again, we're talking to Jonathan Von Tobel, hour number two, more about this. I kind of like the Sixers being anticipatory of these moves that they would make. And then what stopped me from getting to the window was the health of Joel Embiid, that this is a guy that you've just not been able to say, yeah, if he signed me up for 82 and you could guarantee he's there for the playoffs, absolutely it's a good bet to make. But that is really the question mark if they can keep the big fella healthy there. The Mavericks also small move from 11-10-1 to win the NBA title and down from 5-4-1, about 475 to win the West. And that's after the notable signing of one Klay Thompson. Now, we had not heard from Steve Kerr. Of course, this was Splash Brother number two to Steph Curry, all those rings in Golden State. Here's what his now former head coach had to say about Klay.
We're going to miss Klay. You know, we wish him the best. These things rarely go like you want, where you get to draw it up and execute it and everybody goes out together. We were hoping that could happen, but it didn't. Clay's going to have a statue outside Chase someday. He'll be beloved by his teammates and coaches and our fans forever. And it's never easy, but it's all going to, I think it'll all work out for everyone.
Michael, you know how this works, certainly as an executive, and Steve, obviously, right? It's hard to move on from those guys that you're emotionally attached to and had so much success in the past with. How difficult are those conversations in the front office about players that are beloved in that organization?
Well, you know, it's always hard. I mean, it's the tragedy of what happens with age. Father Time is undefeated, and you know, players want to keep playing, and teams want to keep using their great players. But Father Time tells us something different, and I think ultimately the Warriors have faced that. They had a great opportunity when they had the two number one picks early in the draft, and they didn't hit on them. I mean, that's really what hurt their franchise. It isn't that Clay got older and he didn't shoot as well from the three-point line as he typically does in his career. I think they're really in limbo right now. They're not good enough to compete in the West. I mean, as great as Steph Curry is, they're just not good enough. I mean, we look at what Oklahoma City has done, whose odds should have shifted tremendously further than what they have. To me, they're the best team in the West. I think the Mavericks certainly have a chance by adding Clay to get a shooter, because Clay's going to have some open looks in Dallas. There's no question. We saw that in the finals, you know, when they played Boston. There were a lot of open looks. P.J. Washington had a ton of them. He just couldn't make any of them, whereas Clay's going to have those. So I think ultimately there's a really good opportunity, for Oklahoma, but I don't see it with Golden State. And this is what happens. You know, you want to keep making that run. You want to keep the team together, but then the team's really not together. And it's really hard as an executive, and it's easy to say tear it down, but you've got a lot of loyalty to the players that are on the court, players that are on the field, that you want to keep trying to see if you could put this together. But when you miss those picks like they did, where they had an opportunity to propel themselves moving forward, then it becomes a real issue.
17-1 to win the West. You saw on the graphic 40-1 to win the title. This is for Golden State, by the way. That's the eighth betting choice in the West. So that tells you they're looking at a play-in spot, according to the odds, right then and there. So I'm with you. I don't know how getting rid of Clay, if they're going to be able to get better, if they're going to be able to get younger, infuse some energy with Steph. It's going to be very interesting to see what Steve Kerr and company can do. From Dallas's perspective, I think you're spot on. Clay's going to get open looks, and that's the thing. When you've got Kyrie and you got Luka, you've got some ball dominant guys going to leave some wings open. So let's see if Clay can knock down those shots. Maybe Dallas can get right back to where they are. But you know, Michael, yes, the Mavericks have been a nice story in Dallas, but it's still a cowboy town, right? I mean, who are we kidding? We still want to talk about the Cowboys in Dallas, right? Now, there was a picture that surfaced this week of Dak Prescott in a walking boot. And then, you know how X works. You know, X, just do your thing, and everybody's going to freak out. There it is. He's in Cabo. I'd like to be in Cabo. But there's the picture of the walking boot. And then there were subsequent pictures afterward of him in flip-flops. Michael, what do we make of this? Is this a lot to do about nothing, or should this be a bit of a flag?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's something that happened, right? So he wouldn't be putting on a boot if it's something didn't happen. So he's got a foot sprain of some sort that required a boot. I think a lot of this is not going to be really to react to it in terms of Dallas. Wouldn't be, you know, until he comes back. And does he pass the physical? Is he able to pass his preseason physical before they go out to Thousand Oaks and start their training for the regular season? So I wouldn't make too much of it. I mean, obviously, this is going to give Trey Lance a great opportunity to get a lot of reps if he's in that boot, or, you know, if he's going to be missed some time. And look, nothing really matters until the 1st of September anyway. I think ultimately that's the most important area. But I think something happened in this offseason that we don't know about because there's no injury report. There was rumors to this, and this is why we saw some of the odds shifting. I didn't really believe it because I don't think whether Dak's healthy or not, I think the odds should shift towards Philadelphia because Philly has the better team. I mean, right now, you know, we're devoid of running back in Dallas. I mean, I know Zeke's, they re-signed Zeke, who was an inside zone runner. Rico Dowdle, I don't know if he can be the guy. Now, I think they're higher on Deuce Vaughn than most of the media thinks they are, because I think he gives them that change of pace, that Tony Pollard-like juice that they're looking for. We shall see. And, you know, we're going to play two rookies. Guyton's going to have to play, and so is Beebe in the offensive line. And this team lost five road games last year. And anytime you lose five road games, that you look straight to the offensive line is why you've lost road games. I mean, that's really what happens. Your failure to protect the quarterback, your failure to, especially when the offense is as good as Dallas has been, and failure to execute, that's where you look. And so for all the conversation about Dak, for all the conversation about CeeDee Lamb and the contract, the real conversation in Dallas is the offensive line good enough to win on the road? And I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. When you start those two youngsters on the offensive line, you lose Biadasz. He goes to with Dan Quinn to Washington, D.C. I thought that was a significant move as well. So you're right. We're always going to talk about the quarterbacks, and it's a quarterback-driven league, so we understand that narrative. But, yeah, if you're already in a walking boot and you've got two rookies on the offensive line, you better hope that line holds up and you get Zach Martin back to being Zach Martin again. That could be daunting. And I'm with you that the Eagles should be the favorites. They are the favorites. And as we know, no team has repeated in the NFC East as champion in 20 years, which is just a bizarre stat, but it is in fact. So let's see if that trend continues, that would lead you right down the primrose path to the Eagles again. So I think there's a reason why they're about even money to win this division. Cowboys, I'm seeing about plus $1.50. And again, we're going to have John Machota to join us a little bit later on from Dallas, from The Athletic down there. So we'll get his thoughts on Dak and everything else. But Michael, we have a lot of football that I do want to tackle, and we understand why the Niners are the top dog in the NFC. We've got a poll question out on your X page today. We'll get to all of that when we continue the Lombardi Line right here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season. We've got in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, betting trends. You're going to have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts are going to share their top best bets on season win totals, futures, props, giving you the insights you need to stay ahead of the action. So to get the guide, you've got to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. For a limited time, get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro for an unbeatable price, normally $240 a year. You can now subscribe for just $199 with the promo code Lombardi. Plus, we're going to throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all season long. So don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Use the promo code Lombardi to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and get instant access to our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here as we continue this edition on a Sunday morning. And you've got a poll question up right now on your X at Michael Lombardi NFL. And the question today is a simple one, Michael. We understand why the Niners are the top dog. Stormy Bonantoni is going to be very happy that it's her team again. That's kind of the team that has to be beaten in the NFC. So your question was, which team will be the biggest threat to Stormy's Niners? Will it be those Motor City Kitties in Detroit, the Philadelphia Eagles, America's team, or the Green Bay Packers? Now, what's interesting is on Twitter, on X right now, Stormy chimed in, and Michael, she said, how dare you all do this to Femi on his day off? So I get to take the bow and arrows as the Cowboy backer for Femi today.
We didn't really change anything. I mean, you both are here. I mean, there's always going to be a Cowboy fan on this show somehow, some way, right? I mean, I don't know. You know, look, one thing about Stormy that I love her, there's a lot about Stormy, but she doesn't gloat. I mean, she's as apprehensive about the Niners as anybody. But I think to me, when you break this down, you know, I mean, I think Femi wouldn't vote for his Cowboys. Right. I don't know about you, David, but I don't think Femi would. I think I've got him turned around to be more realistic. And I think when you look at this, you have to think about the Detroit Lions. I think that, look, Detroit played one bad game last year. They lost badly to the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. That was their one. But you could make a case, and certainly, you know, the game in Dallas could have gone the way if they would have if the officials would have at least allowed that player to come in and would have officiated the game correctly. So that game there, you know, they lose to the Bears, they lose to the Packers. Both of those are close games. The Bears game was outdoors. You know, it wasn't their day. They lose an overtime game to Seattle. So, look, I think Detroit's primed. Now, they've improved themselves defensively in the areas that they needed to. I think Marcus Davenport's going to be a huge, huge important player for them because they need somebody to go along with Aiden Hutchinson to play on the other side. But this team's got continuity in terms of offensively, with Ben Johnson coming back to run the team. They've got the two running backs. They know exactly what they're going to do, and they can build off it. And I don't get a sense of contentment there by the Lions. I think there's still a hunger there. And, you know, obviously it's going to take – it's not an easy mountain to climb to get back to where you want to go, but it's doable for them because they're going to be able to score points and stay in the game. I mean, look, we got a great opening game against the Rams, which I think will be a fun game to watch. But then, you know, they come back and they have the early bye in week four. You know, they got the Rams, Tampa, Arizona, and Seattle. So they basically play the NFC West the first 4 weeks of the season. Three of those games are against the NFC West. And, you know, even if they're 2-2 at that point, you know, they come back with a chance to really to build the momentum on the second half, well, what would be their second half of the season.
I look at it very similarly. I can understand why the Lions are the shortest number on your poll question today at plus 550. The Eagles are 7-1, the Cowboys 7-1, and then the Packers at 8-1. I will just say at the top of hour two, we'll update the poll. We'll give the final poll results at the end of the show today. Look, Femi is smart. He would not vote for the Cowboys. I will say, because Stormy put out that tweet, that there was no love for the Cowboys. I did vote for the Cowboys just to boost them up a little bit, but I would not play my actual money right now on the Cowboys at 7-1 to potentially win the NFC. Michael, you know this is a real thing. They talk about the Super Bowl hangover for the loser a lot. And if you go back to when the Niners did lose the Super Bowl to the Chiefs, they did not have a great year the next year after. So,
well, Garoppolo got hurt, remember,
right,
though?
That's right. Garoppolo got hurt.
Yep. I mean, they were predicated on Garoppolo being hurt. I think Kyle Shanahan's smart enough to understand that you know, we're going to have some kind of, you know, we're going to need some type of rest and relaxation in terms of when you go to the Super Bowl. What I don't think fans understand is how long and how tough it is on the players when they go to the Super Bowl and they play those extra playoffs. Like Kansas City, because they were a wild card team, had to play an extra game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that starts to add up on you, and it wear and tears on your team. And Andy Reid understands it because he's been here before. He's been to a lot of conference championship games in his career before winning Super Bowls. So I think, to me, Kyle gets it, but a lot of this is going to come down to does Purdy stay healthy, right? And does their team stay healthy? I think that's what we've seen out of the 49ers. Whenever they have had injuries, especially to their defensive front, whether it's been Bosa or someone else, that's when they haven't won games. I think if they could stay healthy with Ayuk, who's coming to camp, Debo, McCaffrey, Kittle, all the players they have, they'll be there at the end.
It is kind of bizarre if you look back at the NFC postseason a year ago, because you can make the case that maybe the Buccaneers should have beaten the Lions, and then maybe the Lions should have beaten the Niners in the title game, and the Packers the week before should have beaten the Niners. Like, there's so many things and twists and turns that while the Niners did win and looked like they had a chance to win the Super Bowl, obviously against the Chiefs, that it was very close, that you could have made a case for not just the Packers, Lions, but really, you could even have thrown in potentially Tampa Bay the way their season kind of ended, and they played Detroit very tough. But the Cowboys would be the one team you say, no, they got absolutely blown out by Green Bay. Out of those four, would you say the Cowboys are the furthest away of the four to challenge the Niners?
I would. I mean, based on the offseason, too, you've got to add that into it, right? I mean, you've got to add what they've done in the offseason and where are they, right? I mean, so they got certainly the concerns defensively. At the corner position, Ken Bland, I know he had six interceptions. He brought a bunch of them back for touchdowns. But is he going to be able to hold up at corner? Is Jordan Lewis going to be able to hold up at nickel? Can Lawrence play at a high level? And where are they with Parsons? You know, I mean, Parsons is a great player. Now, I think Mike Zimmer's going to move Parsons around, and they're going to get in that odd floater look and try to create some problems for the defense. But, you know, that they're going to have to be able to hold up against the run. I think that's going to be one of the things that when you looked at their team last year, that Dan Quinn always struggled with the power inside. Mm-hmm. You know, they were always a little bit vulnerable to the run game inside particularly, but they got ahead of people and they were able to turn the ball over. That really helped them. And they didn't turn it over on offense. They were the number two team in the league in terms of not committing turnovers offensively. They were 12th in getting turnovers. So I think there's a lot here. What kind of team are they? And I think that it starts with that offensive line, right? Are they good enough in that offensive line? Now, here's what we do know. McCarthy coached the hell out of Dak.
Yes.
It was the best Dak year he's ever had in his career. So give McCarthy credit on that. But I think to me, the depth of the team, I thought they overachieved. I didn't think they underachieved last year, David.
I totally agree with you. And you mentioned that defense with Zim coming in now, coming back to Dallas, taking over for Dan Quinn. It's different, right? Where Dan kind of likes those lighter guys that can run. Zim likes more of the beefier guys. I know they're going to try to get Mazi Smith. He's going to have to step up this year. In the interior of that defense, Overshawn's going to come back off his injury from a year ago, have to play some linebacker. Could you look to those two guys as new players, if you will, Mazi off his rookie year, Overshawn off an injury, and say those are the guys that are going to have to step up if Dallas is going to be a little bit tougher in that middle?
They have to be. I mean, they spent a first-round pick on Mazi. They've got to get something out of him. And, you know, the other kid, they spent a third-round pick on. They got to get stuff out of their inside defensive line. But a lot of this is predicated on how you play offensively. You know, what happened to me in the Green Bay game was I felt like Dallas felt like they couldn't stop Green Bay. Wow. I think Mike got desperate with the play calling. I think it was really that instead of slowing the game down, they tried to speed it up, and they got into a track that they couldn't really play with. I think they needed to speed it down, and the defense couldn't get control of the game. I mean, they just couldn't get control of the game. They couldn't pressure. They had no answers for what Green Bay was doing. Because why? Green Bay's really good at pass protection. So Green Bay was able to protect the front and they attacked the secondary that didn't have Diggs in it last year, which became very vulnerable. And I think that's going to be a real issue. I think that's what happens. But when you play from behind, you can throw the ball on the Cowboys. But if they're in front where they can utilize the scheme and get Parsons free, create those turnovers, that becomes a real issue. So a lot of this is – that's why we, you know, as a betting network, we have to understand the way coaches coach the game. That's why we like the Chargers to me to win more, because he's going to coach the game to give his team a chance to win and not lose the game in the first quarter.
Yeah, I think it's why we like the Eagles too, with Vic Fangio calling that defense there this year in Philly. So it could be some adults in the room there, certainly in LA and Philadelphia. Okay, when we come back, we'll find out if the public is on the right side of some of these division winners to be in the NFL. That's next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
When you get up and watch the Lombardi Line, also check out VSiN.com before you place those wagers, because you're going to get your daily best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, and they do vary. You got a betting tools, betting guides each and every day to start off your day the proper way at VSiN.com. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here as we continue breaking down the NFL. Again, you got to become a VSiN Pro subscriber if you are not already to get access to the NFL guide that's already out. It's like Christmas comes early for us here in the network, Michael, when we get to talk nonstop NFL football. And, you know, normally you don't want to be on the side of the public. We understand that. It's certainly in what we do. But when you look at the most bet upon teams to win their divisions, the public has certainly made their case for which teams they believe are going to win said divisions. And in the NFC East, 77% of the handle and 63% of the wagers here are going towards the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, the Eagles are basically a pick 'em plus a dollar to win the East. I mentioned earlier in the program, no team has repeated as division champs in 20 years. It's bizarre. Back to the Donovan McNabb Eagles. That's the last time it happened. Cowboys won it last year. So history certainly on the side of the Eagles there. You see in the North, it's not as severe as you might think, and there are actually longer odds this year in the lines at plus $1.50 to win it at 50%, 7% of the handle, 66% of the bets. Odds on favorite for the Falcons, Michael, in the South. Did you see that coming? Almost half the money coming or the handle coming in on the Falcons, but 70% of the bets coming in on the Falcons. Of course, the Niners, we understand that. And almost 2-1, 80% of the handle coming in on the Niners. Any of those surprise you out of the big four in the NFC?
Not really. You know, David, it's a little bit like people that are betting Bronny James to be the rookie of the year in the NBA. I mean, it's just whatever is the reality is, okay, Kirk Cousins goes to Atlanta, so we're going to play Atlanta. Nobody gets anything superficial. Bronny James scores 4 points in a summer league game, and DraftKings we have out there, will he score over 20 in a regular season game, and it's only 10 to 1. You know, you can't cure stupidity. I mean, like, the guy's going to be in the G League all year, and yet people are betting for him for Rookie of the Year. Like, because that's what they're being fed. They're being fed that information like he's some kind of great player because his name is Bronny James. I mean, at some point, you just have to say, wait a minute, what's reality here? Yeah. Stop, okay? Well, what's reality in the South? I don't think anybody knows what's reality in the South. Like, I can't, like, all I know is Tampa, who won the South last year, in week 17, went down to New Orleans, hosted New Orleans at home and got whooped by the Saints. Mm. Now, look, we also know that Derek Carr is the Ricky Fowler of the NFL, that when he's out of it, he's going to play great. When he's in it, he's not going to play so great. All right. So we know that. But the reality here is I don't know what teams. Atlanta can't stop anybody on defense. They haven't been able to. Their best defensive player last year in the front seven was Calais Campbell. He's now in Miami. So where are they getting anybody to stop? They couldn't stop Baker Mayfield in a 2-minute drill at home. So, like, I can't – you have to have good defense to be able to advance and win. Why did the Bucs win? It wasn't Baker Mayfield the reason they won the South. It was because their defense was good. And when they got healthy in the back end, in the front end, and they took Devin White out of the lineup, mm-hmm. and they put Britt in there, they became a better defense. So – like, I think to me, the South is just so hard. But the reason the betting number is there is because the public just hears, oh, they got Kirk Cousins and they won 7 games last year with Desmond Ridder, so they're going to be better. No, no, the teams evolve and change and everything becomes different. So, you know, look, the NFC East, think about it. The last 10 years, the Cowboys have won 5 of the divisions. The Eagles have won 3, and the Washington team has won 2. The team we're watching on Hard Knocks hasn't won any in the last 10 years. And when you watch Hard Knocks, you realize, wait a minute, that makes sense. They're not, you know, what they're talking about is why they're never going to win.
You couldn't have said it better. I look at the Buccaneers. By the way, they were 11-1 in some books this time last year after, you know, post Tom Brady to win the division. Everybody wrote them off. And then, of course, they win the division at the longest number this time last year. There's no way you can get me to go odds on for the Falcons with Kirk Cousins coming off that Achilles, age 35. You hope he's healthy and you hope he's – I like Kirk. It's nothing against Kirk. You know, I was there in D.C. when Kirk was there and also when Raheem Morris was there. And he was brought in kind of a reclamation project on the old Mike Shanahan staff with Kyle and Sean McVay. And then you saw Raheem go out to L.A. and kind of resurrect his career there as a D coordinator. Now he gets another shot as a head coach in Atlanta. Can he be a better head coach this time around? Like, it's been a decade. And, you know, if you learn from your mistakes, hopefully you don't make them again. That's a lot to wager on as an odds-on favorite with a kind of a reclamation project head coach and now an older quarterback coming off a devastating injury.
Well, he's also taken over defense that doesn't have Aaron Donald on it.
Right.
I mean, their best defensive player is Grady Jarrett, who was out last year with an ACL. He's coming back off of that. Like, where are they getting pressure from? Zach Harrison, who they drafted in the 3rd round last year? You know, I mean, where are they who's their best defensive front seven player? There's a great question for you. Mm. Who's their best front seven player that you can't name them?
No.
Troy Anderson? I mean, come on. Lorenzo Carter, who they signed from the Giants? You know, David Omiyada from the Saints is a 3 technique who's over 30. Like, who's their best pass rusher? Who is going to be their best player? Look, we could say all we want about Raheem coaching the Rams defense, but when they were not, they didn't have a lot of players, they weren't as effective. The Steelers went out there and beat them, you know, without an offense. So, like, let's temper that a little bit. And when you look at this Falcon team, they just don't have anybody. Because they continually refuse to draft defensive players in the top 10. Here's what's fascinating about the Falcons that no one in the national media will ever discuss with you is they're one of the slowest offenses in football. Mm. Well, they got Kyle Pitts. He's not a tight end. Well, they got Drake London. He's not a separator of offense. He's slow. Okay, well, they got Bijan. Okay, great. But the running back doesn't make your offense fast. Like, they're the slowest offense in football. They have no skill, and yet they've been drafting skill. Like, whoever put this team together doesn't understand it. And then they have one of the highest paid offensive lines, and when they have to pass protect, it becomes an issue. And Kirk ain't getting out of his way. Like, I think to me, nobody wants to peel back the layer on the Falcons. They just want to say, well, they got Kirk Cousins. They're going to win it at minus 115. And you so, okay, Lombardi, you're so smart. Who's going to win it? I don't know. I really don't know. I have no idea. They're all about the same. They're not any good.
Yeah, and that's why, again, I'm with you. I can't lay that with four teams, and we think Carolina's going to be better this year. We'll see about that. But, again, at least three teams with the Saints and the Buccaneers that should be in the mix. And, again, when you look at Atlanta drafting Penix at eight and not maybe Dallas Turner could have been a defensive player to speed up that defense. It is still surprising to me. So I can't get there with the Falcons either. Not at that price point. The Eagles at even money. We alluded to it in the last segment. And I do. I mean, look, I look at the coordinators and I say, what an upgrade. I don't know what Kellen Moore really is because it didn't work out well with the Chargers last year after leaving Dallas. But maybe that was just a whole culture thing in L.A. We'll find out what he looks like here in Philadelphia, third team in 3 years. It's really the Vic Fangio signing that I really like for Philadelphia as a D coordinator. Can this let Sirianni let those coaches coach? Like, what does Nick have to do now as the head coach to make sure those guys do their jobs?
Well, I think he's got to get back to the understanding why they won in 2022 when they were able to get 204 points in the second quarter and run the football. Look, they've got the most talented team. They've got the best tight end. They're really good. They're good on the offensive line, even though they lose, Jason Kelce. Their Cam Jurgens comes in. I mean, they've put resources in their offensive line. They're good. They've got to stay healthy. That's A. B, they got to stay in shape, which is something they weren't last year. Between Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, they probably put on 100 pounds during the season, which then made them ineffective. Now, Bryce Huff comes in and gives them somebody off the edge who can really scream to go along with Josh Sweat. I mean, two years ago, they got 60 of their 70 sacks from their defensive front, which was a huge difference. Are they going to be good enough at corner? Now, they drafted corners to see if they can come in and play, whether it's be DeJean or whether it's be Mitchell, who they drafted in the first round. DeJean, they drafted in the second, but he's more of a nickel. So this is going to be interesting for the great Kellen Moore, because are they going to be willing to run the ball? Will they give the ball to Saquon Barkley like they did when they had Miles Sanders, who gained almost 1,200 yards for them? You know, they had two backs that could run the football effectively, and they were able to control and play from in front and run play action to help Jalen Hurts. That's going to be the key. Now, defensively, are they fast enough? I think they were slow as hell on defense last year. You know, Devin White comes in there. Is he going to be still? He wasn't a good player last year for Tampa, but the Eagles always try to cheat at linebacker. So this year it's Zach Braun and Devin White. Are they going to be good enough? We don't know. Nakobe Dean was the guy they were hoping for. They signed Oren Burks from the 49ers. Not sure about that. So there's some question marks here, but I don't know who's going to exploit them. It certainly ain't going to be the Giants with Daniel Jones at quarterback. And is it going to be the Washington Commanders with a rookie quarterback? We'll see.
Yeah, it is kind of fascinating. By the way, in the NFL guide that's out right now, when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, 18 of our 21 experts did pick the Eagles to win this division. So pretty much consensus here that the Eagles should be at that price point, the play on. So again, I can understand why that is. We're going to go down to Dallas in the next segment, catch up with John Machota and see what's going on with Dak Prescott in that boot. What's going on with Jerry Jones, Mike Zimmer, a lot of changes to Mike McCarthy's staff. We'll discuss all of that next right here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new NFL betting guide here at VSiN. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, which includes in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every single team. You got a new quarterback and a head coach. Well, we're going to break those down. How about Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best future bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, the Roy, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a season better or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. So visit VSiN.com/guide. Get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That's VSIN.com/guide. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here. We were talking a little Cowboys football earlier, Michael. So what better way to start off this conversation in this segment by going down to Dallas with John Machota. He is a Cowboys reporter for The Athletic. Joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow John on X at John Machota. And John, we were talking about this with Michael here about the boot. We saw the picture of Dak in Cabo in a walking boot. Is this a whole lot about nothing, or should there be some concern for Cowboy fans out there?
No, I think this is a lot about nothing. I wouldn't say nothing. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, to have a walking boot on, he's obviously doing it for some type of precaution, but I don't, it's nothing serious from everything I've heard. And even his girlfriend who's there with him posted a picture yesterday with him and his brother walking around, Dak's wearing sandals, kind of making a joke of it because they are on vacation. And so the thing is that, you know, when Dak suffered that injury in 2020, where, I mean, it was so severe, you know, the bones popping out of the skin, they knew at that time that this wasn't going to be something that even after one surgery, it was probably going to need maintenance throughout the rest of his career. And so I think that has a little bit of a factor in it. But, you know, this is also one of those things. I don't think it's anything noteworthy. I don't think it's anything that would keep him from practicing or doing anything if training camp started today. But, you know, I get it. It's the NFL. It's the off season. So when there are things like this that pop up, it's going to be a storyline, especially when you're talking about Dak Prescott, especially when you're talking about a guy who is entering the final year of his contract. And the way things sit right now, he could potentially be headed to free agency. And that generally doesn't happen to franchise quarterbacks to just be out there for open bidding. So, yeah, it's not just, you know, some people say, oh, yeah, you know, they're making a lot of this boot thing and it means nothing. But then at the same point, it's like throughout the season, if Dak doesn't get a new contract, he's going to be a major storyline just by his play and how the Cowboys are playing because of the fact that he could hit free agency.
Okay, so let's talk about the contract situation. What is your understanding of the plan? CeeDee Lamb says he's not coming. You know, Brandon Ayuk, who's in the same situation, says he is coming. So what do you get a sense from the Jones family is their plan on how to approach CeeDee Lamb and how to approach all these contracts as we move forward?
That's a good question. I thought for sure at least one of these deals would have gotten done by now. But as we get closer to training camp, I will say CeeDee Lamb, I still believe will be the first one out of that group to get a new contract. And I think it'll either happen right before that first day of training camp or it'll happen during training camp. And really, I think what we saw last year from Zach Martin kind of plays into this a little bit. You know, Zach Martin didn't show up to the start of training camp, missed the first few weeks, and then finally they got a contract done because he wanted a new deal. And so ultimately he got it. And so if you're CeeDee Lamb and you see that last season, why would you think any differently if you want to get one of these deals that's up there in that Justin Jefferson neighborhood? And so I can certainly see CeeDee not showing up to training camp or anything if he doesn't have a new deal. But that's on the, I think the Cowboys have to come to some type of compromise with him to try and figure that thing out. So I do think it ultimately gets done. I do think he'll get his before Dak gets his next contract. But it could come with, you know, us being out in Oxnard and a couple weeks go by and there's no 88 on the field. And I know fans will be panicking if that happens.
John, if you go back 1 year ago to now, right, the conversation was Dak put it out there. He said, I won't throw 10 interceptions next year. He didn't. He threw 9. Right. And everybody said, oh, it's going to be a terrible year for Dak because Kellen Moore's gone and Mike McCarthy's calling plays. And then Dak arguably had his best year. Where is Dak and Mike? Are they tied together? Because I think the rhetoric is if this goes south, it's going to cost Mike his job.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense of where everything's at right now. I mean, these guys are both in the final years of their contracts. And the thing is that they've clearly shown over the last three seasons they can get it done in the regular season, winning 12 games each of those three seasons, but that's not enough. I mean, that's the big reason why we're talking about this right now, because they didn't make a deep playoff run. And on that team last year, that you could argue was the most talented team they've had since those 90s Cowboys teams. To have that, the last time the Dallas Cowboys were on the field, they played a game that you could argue is the worst loss in Cowboys franchise history, just with everything factored in, the way they played, the opponent, how loaded that team was. They needed to go much farther than that. And so because of that, I think that's had some residual effect on Jerry Jones and the fact that he hasn't wanted to add anything to this team because he wants to let this season play out, see if they can make a deep playoff run. And if not, then I think during next offseason, if it's the same Cowboy season we've seen or worse, then that could lead to some major changes. And the first two people you point to would be Mike and Dak.
How about Mike Zimmer's addition defensively? What have you noticed in watching practices about the defense and how things have changed from Dan Quinn to Mike Zimmer?
You know, just with the way these OTAs and minicamp, you know, are structured, you don't see a ton of new stuff. And when we see Mike Zimmer out there, when we saw him out there, you know, it wasn't like the fiery guy or anything like that, that I'm sure the team's seeing behind the scenes, or at least will once training camp and the preseason starts. And that's so all the biggest thing I have to go off of is just what other players and people in the organization have said to kind of come up with what I think will be the biggest difference. And for me, I think what you'll see is, you know, there's a little bit of this talk around here right now that, like, you know, Dan Quinn, it was such a bad exit the way that they lost to the Packers, and kind of knocking Dan for his defense. And I just want to remind people of how bad it was before Dan took that defense over. And so let's not act like the guy doesn't know how to coach. But I think with Zimmer, what you're going to get is, I don't think he's going to, maybe you don't get as many takeaways. Maybe there's not as many sacks, but I think as a whole, it'll be more of a sound defense. Maybe that leads them being better in the run game. But there was something with Dan Quinn's defense that it allowed them to, yeah, maybe they give up some big plays, but they'd also take the ball away a ton, obviously multiple years leading the league in takeaways, which is obviously hard to do. So I think that maybe what you see with Zimmer is more of a solid defense that maybe it doesn't have as big a splash plays, but maybe they also don't get gashed as much against the run, which has been a major problem for the Cowboys the last few years.
John, that's something Michael and I talked about earlier in the program. Really, the D-line, you're going to have to look for Mazi Smith, maybe Overshawn at linebacker coming off that injury to really fortify the run, which really was a problem last year. And then the attrition in the offensive line, you got to start a rookie right out, you know, first-round pick. You lose Biotic going to D.C. How concerning is it for the O-lines and D-lines of this football team?
Oh, it's concerning for sure because – you know, we'll start with the D-line. You need Mazi Smith to make a significant improvement over his rookie year with where this defensive line sits. I mean, defensive tackle hasn't been a strength of the Cowboys for a long time. You probably go all the way back to maybe Jay Ratliff. I mean, it's been a while. Mm. So they don't re-sign Jonathan Hankins, and that hurts because he was a solid veteran for them in the middle. And so you don't add anybody in free agency, and you don't add anybody significantly in the draft at the position. And again, you weren't good against the run. So how are you going to get better at defensive tackle? The only answer is that Mazi Smith makes this tremendous leap from last year, and he's coming off a shoulder surgery. He didn't participate in OTAs or minicamp, so we don't even know if that's something you can count on. And so if they're not right at defensive tackle, what do you do during the season? Are you going to make a trade? I mean, it's a position that's going to be hard to get quality defensive tackle play for cheap. And so that remains an issue for sure. And then the offensive line, you know, you're losing Tyron Smith and Tyler Biadasz. And even if you're not a huge fan of either of those players, which they were both good, solid players, even, you know, right before they left, you're replacing them with two rookies. So there's no doubt that there could be some issues there. I do think Tyler Guyton will be a good player. I just wonder if there's going to be some growing pains early on making that move over to left tackle from playing on the right side at Oklahoma. And it's just going to be, he's going to be asked to do a lot replacing Tyron Smith. And so, I could see some hiccups early. I mean, he's going to have to go out there week one and go against Myles Garrett, you know what I mean? And he's going to have to go throughout all the training camp against Micah Parsons. I mean, it's not going to be easy. And so yeah, to sit here and say, oh no, they're just going to fill those holes, it's not going to be a problem at all. That's some wishful thinking. I mean, those are two areas that if they don't play well in those areas, it could be a bad season for the Cowboys.
All right, John, we got less than a minute to go. Give me your prediction. Do they win 11 games or do they win less?
No, I think they win less. I think they win probably maybe 9, 10, something in that neighborhood. The team isn't as good as it was last year. I think they've taken a little bit of a step back. And I just think with, you know, Mike Zimmer bringing in a new defense, some of the changes we just talked about on the offensive line, it's hard for me to think that they're just going to go back and win 12 games again. So I would have them around 9, maybe 10. And then ultimately, I still think that'll be enough to get them a wild card. And then the team will be judged by what they do in January.
Going to be fascinating because, as you know, John, it's never a dull moment down there in Big D. Thanks for joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Enjoy the rest of your...
Thank you, John. Great job. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of it until you get to training camp. We know it's going to be busy, but we appreciate your time.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
Great stuff there. And yeah, it's Michael, as you know, it's never a dull moment when it comes to Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. We'll update the poll at the top of hour number 2. That is next here in the Lombardi Line.